Welcome to this new detailed edition of the BayPay Forum Blockchain News. My name is Cindy and today is November 21, 2019. This edition is brought to you by PayCademy, the first business academy to learn payments and fintech. If you have some news in payments and fintech, send it to us at press@baypayforum.com and we will do our best to include your news. In this edition, we will talk about Bitcoin miner Canaan's IPO nets just $90 million after losing banking partner. Bitcoin BTC mining giant Canaan Creative has raised $90 million in its initial public offering IPO, over 75% less than expected. According to Bloomberg, which quoted filings from United States regulator the Securities and Exchange Commission SEC on November 20, Canaan sold 10 million shares for $9 each. From $400 million to $90 million. Previously, the company looked to raise considerably more. Having failed to secure an IPO in Hong Kong last year, Canaan looked to the U.S., with a funding figure of $400 million circulating prior to the event. A setback came when Canaan lost its biggest bank, Credit Suisse, just last week. As a result, the size of the IPO was dramatically reduced. Documents submitted at the time contained a projected $100 million goal and did not mention Credit Suisse. According to Bloomberg, citing people familiar with the matter, Credit Suisse was concerned whether the offering could secure sufficient orders. Canaan Inc.'s first mover advantage. The successful completion nonetheless makes Canaan the first Bitcoin mining giant to navigate an IPO, beating major competitor Bitmain, which plans to do the same. As Cointelegraph reported, a filing at the end of October revealed an IPO sponsored by embattled German lender, Deutsche Bank. At the same time, infighting among senior management threatens to ice the proceedings. Like Canaan, Bitmain failed to secure permission to conduct the IPO in Hong Kong in 2018. PayPal CEO hodls Bitcoin and only Bitcoin. Dan Schulman, CEO of payment processor PayPal, revealed during an interview that he does indeed own Bitcoin, BTC. On November 20, Fortune reported that PayPal CEO Dan Schulman stopped by its offices where he discussed a variety of topics, including the reason for PayPal's withdrawal from the Libra Association and whether he is the proud owner of any cryptocurrencies. PayPal was the first to leave Libra. Schulman explained that PayPal withdrew from Libra because the company decided to put its attention elsewhere. According to the CEO, it was a question of where do we want to put our attention, and what do we want to do today to advance our mission? He added, "You know, we think if we focus on our own roadmap, we'd be able to advance financial inclusion faster than if we put all these resources against Libra." Schulman added that Libra will start going down a road that his company remains very interested in looking at, and once Libra starts to figure things out, we'll take another look at where they are. At the beginning of October, a PayPal spokesperson told Cointelegraph that the company had officially left the association, adding that they remain supportive of Libra's aspirations and continue to look forward to dialogue on ways to work together in the future. A lot of promise to blockchain technology. PayPal's CFO John Rainey said in May that the firm has teams that are working on blockchain and cryptocurrency, and that they wish to participate in that technology in whatever form it takes in the future. In the Fortune interview, Schulman was reluctant to share any significant details as to what exactly PayPal is working on in the sphere, although he was quick to point out that it is not necessarily competitive with Libra, adding, "We think there's a lot of promise to blockchain technology. It's intriguing to us, but it really needs to do something that the traditional rails can't do. Most people think that blockchain is about efficiency, but the system today is pretty efficient." Regarding cryptocurrencies, the CEO said that it is still very volatile, and that they do not have much demand for it by merchants because merchants operate on very small margins. He said, "Until it becomes less volatile, it won't be a currency that is widely accepted by merchants on the web, not the dark web, but the web." As to whether he owns any cryptocurrencies himself, Schulman's answer was short and straightforward. "Yes, Bitcoin. Only." Bloomberg panel, Bitcoin more attractive during times of global uncertainty. John Pfeffer, founder of Pfeffer Capital, together with Travis Kling, founder and CIO of Ikigai Asset Management, and Charles Magera, head of markets for blockchain, discussed Bitcoin, BTC, in the context of Brexit, trade wars, and geopolitical uncertainty. On November 20, the panel of three sat down for an interview with Bloomberg's Alistair Marsh at the Future of Digital Assets briefing in London, where they took a closer look at the idea that Bitcoin becomes more attractive as an investment during times of global uncertainty. Bitcoin, the ultimate store of value? 120, Charles Magera started off the conversation by agreeing to the idea that BTC does indeed become more appealing during threats of recessions and general global times of uncertainty. I totally buy into that idea, he said. 312, John Pfeffer continued by saying that BTC is poised to become digital gold. Sooner or later that is going to happen, Pfeffer said, pointing out that if BTC were already considered today's digital gold, the upside of BTC would not be the same, as it would be worth at least one or two orders of magnitudes more. He added, we think of BTC in our portfolio as it goes into our venture portfolio. It is a venture that aspires to become digital gold, and is showing great promise of doing that. Because it hasn't done that yet, there is a lot of upside, but also downside. 535, Travis Kling gives perhaps the most direct answer when he says that Bitcoin is a risk asset, one with specific investment characteristics that become increasingly more attractive the more irresponsible monetary and fiscal policy is from central banks and governments globally, adding, investors in BTC today aren't investing in Bitcoin as a store of value today, we're speculating that it may become a store of value because it has the characteristics to be a good store of value. 11 o'clock, Kling further points out that if the United States was still on the gold standard, and was balancing its budget every year instead of spending $1 trillion more than they collect, we might not need Bitcoin so much. However, as Kling puts it, that ain't the world we're living in. U.S. national debt growth is not sustainable. In November, the head of the United States Federal Reserve Jerome Powell noted that currently, U.S. national debt is growing faster than nominal GDP. He admitted that the current economic policy is not sustainable, but that it is not its job to fix it. Ultimately, in the long run, that's not a sustainable place to be, he said. U.S. debt has now topped $23 trillion, which adds up to $70,000 per head of the population, or more than $1 million for every Bitcoin that will ever exist. German bank boosts Bitcoin, negative interest rates hit every account. Bitcoin cautious Germany has seen its first bank demand that ordinary savers pay it to hold their money even as little as one. According to multiple local press outlets, including the Süddeutsche Zeitung on November 19, the Volksbank Raiffeisenbank Fürstenfeldbruck (VRF) in northern Bavaria is now charging 0.5% negative interest rates on the smallest deposits. Bank on negative interest rates, we had to. We had to do it, the publication quoted the bank's management as saying. The reason, they said, was the cost of parking money at the European Central Bank, ECB. In Germany, negative interest rates previously impacted only deposits above 100,000, which constituted an interest-free allowance. VRF's move makes it the first lender in the country to target savings below that level. Recently, more clients have been coming to us from other banks where they've already used up their allowance, the management continued. Germany could open floodgates for banks. As Cointelegraph reported, negative interest rates are beginning to form part of the ECB's monetary policy. The phenomenon ultimately means that some portion of savers must pay banks to hold their money. Critics have warned that such moves would incentivize the public to move into cash, while alternatives such as Bitcoin, BTC, also stand to benefit. By contrast, Bitcoin does not suffer from the inflationary meddling in its supply and associated destruction of its value, meaning hodlers would never be forced to pay to own it. Last month, entrepreneur Cameron Winklevoss noted the cryptocurrency was the ideal method of escaping negative rates on bonds, which account for investments worth $17 trillion. Speaking to Süddeutsche Zeitung meanwhile, the CEO of a German consumer portal warned that VRF could open the floodgates. We're seeing a lot of movement on the market at present, Oliver Mayer said. He noted that the ECB's decision to cut its benchmark interest rate for banks to -0.5% from -0.4% was the cause of the upset. Mystery man gets Berlin shop to drop BitPay, accept Bitcoin directly. An ice cream shop in Berlin's trendy Friedrichshain district has revealed that a chat with an unknown super nice guy spurred them to spearhead Bitcoin adoption with the local crowd. That unknown guy turned out to have been the legendary Bitcoin, BTC, evangelist and educator Andreas Antonopoulos, as a November 21 Twitter thread from the retailer, Chippy Chippy Bombin, revealed. Andreas Antonopoulos spreads knowledge. Everything began in a local burger bar. We started accepting Bitcoin in June of this year. At room 77 I met a guy who was super nice and explained to me all the basics about Bitcoin and got me interested in getting BTC myself instead of using BitPay and receiving euros. The next day I found out he was Andreas Antonopoulos. The thread continues to outline that paving the way toward crypto entrepreneurship began with getting a Trezor hardware wallet for cold storage and starting to directly accept Bitcoin via the open source payment processor BTC Pay server. Weeks later, the shop began accepting payments via the second layer scalability solution Lightning Network, later taking its ice cream and hot chocolate to Berlin's Lightning Conference. The thread continues, I am convinced that little shops like ours are a very important factor to Bitcoin growth. When non-Bitcoiners see more businesses accepting Bitcoin, they will start to stop fearing it and would get more curious about it and would like to be a part of it. The since-exposed Antonopoulos responded positively on Twitter, writing, "You took the effort to fully understand cryptocurrency and the implications of how you could better run your business with it. More small businesses need to do exactly this. Amazing." Judging by other responses to the thread, it cannot hurt the industry's future that these local Bitcoin pioneers also happen to make superb gelato. Bitcoin Gelato Day. Perhaps the most famous culinary crypto anecdote will remain forever associated with May 22, 2010, the day the first ever purchase with Bitcoin was made for an order of two pizzas at a cost of 10,000 BTC. In today's prices, that would be an almost $80 million takeaway. Today the milestone is celebrated each year as Bitcoin Pizza Day. This October, the French national branch of Domino's Pizza launched an ordering competition, offering the winner a prize of $110,000 in Bitcoin or cash. Sacramento Kings CTO, fans quit spending Bitcoin when the price hiked. The Sacramento Kings, who spearheaded Bitcoin, BTC, payments for fan merchandise back in 2014, have revealed some of the quirks in their history of cryptocurrency engagement. According to a November 21 report from Front Office Sports, the NBA team's chief technology officer, Ryan Montoya, remarked, "People from all over the world were buying Kings jerseys, tickets, different Kings gear. They were super excited that this team was accepting Bitcoin. We even put a Bitcoin ATM in the arena. Then the Bitcoin price went up to $1,200 and they quit spending the Bitcoin." Beyond merchandise, when the Kings first launched Bitcoin payment support, the coin was valued at $800, 10 times less than the current price. Montoya remains positive, however. While Bitcoin's eye-popping appreciation may make merchandise purchases with the coin less appealing, the Kings' involvement in the cryptocurrency and blockchain sector remains extensive. The team mines Bitcoin in its data center and this year announced a blockchain-based rewards program in partnership with BlockParty. "We have a very tech-savvy ownership group and innovation is a given, it's part of our DNA," Montoya said. Season ticket holders, according to Montoya, continue to pay in Bitcoin and the Kings have their sights on an ambitious integration of blockchain across its ecosystem, believing it can reduce friction for fan engagement. "The team's mining center was established largely for educational purposes," he said, with the center leading local workforce development efforts under the Mining for Good program. "We utilize that, the center, to engage the community and teach the youth about STEM education and the importance of blockchain. Students of Sacramento should not be exposed to it 10 years from now, they should understand now that it's a cool piece of technology and powering these things in the arena." The Kings have also ventured into crypto collectibles via a partnership with Crypto Kaiju and runs interactive scavenger hunts for its fans, offering them the chance to win Kaiju collectibles connected to sports fan privileges like courtside seats and VIP tours. Education and fan engagement. As reported, the Kings blockchain-based rewards program, which launched this October, was integrated into the team's prediction game Call the Shot. Fans are able to earn blockchain tokens that have no monetary value and can only be redeemed for club-specific prizes. In June 2018, the Kings partnered with crypto mining hardware firm Mining Store to mine top altcoin Ether (ETH) to fund tech education scholarships. Silvergate Bank CEO bets on higher crypto price volatility after $40 million IPO. Crypto-friendly Silvergate Bank is spending cash from its initial public offering this month to expand its offerings, anticipating higher cryptocurrency price volatility will fuel rising trading volumes and deposits. In an interview, Silvergate CEO Alan Lane said the IPO is providing fresh capital for new products to meet the rising demand from institutions for full cryptocurrency lending and deposit solutions. Lane said that greater price volatility could bring more price differentials and profit opportunities to crypto markets. That would lead traders to increase dollar deposits with Silvergate. We don't predict when it will happen, but we know that there might be an additional period where the volatility drives up volumes, and want to make sure that we can help our customers when that happens, he said. One potential catalyst could be the Bitcoin block reward getting cut in half in the next year, Lane said, with the idea that a decrease of new supply could boost the price. Other events might include regulatory approval of exchange-traded funds for crypto, hard forks that create new breakaway currencies such as Bitcoin Cash, or high-profile hacks of crypto exchanges that affect sentiment. In our experience, it's not so much about the absolute price of the asset, but rather the volatility in the price where we actually see potential changes in the behavior of some of our customers, Lane said. Expanding product line. The California-based commercial bank plans to launch a cryptocurrency lending product in the fourth quarter and settlement and custody services for fiat currencies and digital assets by June 2020 at the latest. Two of its biggest profit generators are transaction fees from trading and yields on the investments it makes using client deposits, Lane said, with the fresh capital offsetting its investment in new products for those areas. The new lending product, set to be launched in fourth quarter 2019, would be part of the Silvergate Exchange Network, SEN, a payment system designed for crypto exchanges and their big clients to transfer funds in the network. It would enable clients to borrow fiat currencies from the bank using Bitcoin holdings as collateral, according to Lane. The bank decided to add the settlement and custody services within 6 months after launching the lending product because of the growing demand from its client base, he said. We've already been working with the New York DFS, and submitted an application with them to form a New York-licensed trust company for our settlement and custody services, Lane said. Other New York-chartered trust companies in the crypto market include Coinbase, Gemini, Paxos, Bakkt, and Fidelity Digital Asset Services. Overall, Silvergate is among a very short list of U.S. financial institutions that are banking crypto institutions. They include Metropolitan Commercial Bank, Signature Bank, and Cross River Bank. Silvergate's clientele is approximately 60% U.S. and 40% international entities, Lane said. Banking basics. Silvergate Bank was formed as a traditional commercial bank in Southern California in 1988, but started pivoting in 2013 to serve crypto exchanges, startups, and institutional investors. Lane said that the decision to enter the crypto market was simple. Our loans were growing faster than our deposits. We were just looking for other sources of deposits. He said that today its balance sheet is still deep enough to support much more loan volume from crypto customers. The bank doubled deposits in 2017 and more than tripled the client base since it started banking crypto-related businesses, according to its IPO filing. The surprising reason why Blockstack could be America's first crypto IPO. Blockchain startup Blockstack is currently evaluating how to issue new tokens for general miners. The issuance of new tokens is the main issue here, Blockstack CEO Manib Ali told CoinDesk. Because within the US we're treating STX tokens as securities, if new tokens are being minted by the protocol and they're being released in the ecosystem, we need a legal framework for them. That framework could include an initial public offering, IPO, he said. In September, Blockstack became the first blockchain startup in the U.S. to raise money through a token offering approved by the Securities and Exchange Commission, SEC. Planning to activate the process of mining on the Blockstack blockchain early next year, Ali explained there are a few different ways new tokens could be issued to miners in a similarly legally compliant and regulated way. First, the company could issue STACs, STX, tokens to miners under a Regulation S offering. Under Regulation S, Blockstack would be free to mint new STX on the blockchain and issue STX to active miners on the platform without needing to receive approval from the SEC. Granted, this also means mining on Blockstack would be restricted to non-US persons and most likely locked for a period of a year and a day. That's one way of starting mining, on Blockstack, which won't be ideal in the sense that we don't want to exclude US people from it, Ali said. According to the blockchain attorney that represented Blockstack for its 2019 token offering, Robert H. Rosenblum of law firm Wilson Sonsini Goodrich & Rosati, there is the possibility of offering newly issued tokens to miners in the U.S. under an alternative category called Regulation D. However, all miners under Regulation D must be accredited investors. What's more, these investors would not be able to receive STX through mining for at least a year and a day. To avoid such complications and open up miner participation to all interested persons in the U.S., Blockstack could host a second regulation a token offering. While this would open up miner participation to both accredited and non-accredited investors in the U.S., Blockstack would be restricted to an issuance cap. The big problem with a Reg A offering is that you can't sell more than $50 million worth of assets in any 12-month period, said Rosenblum. Once the process of mining launches on the Blockstack blockchain next year, the issuance of new STX tokens could exceed the $50 million limit, which is why Ali told CoinDesk he is considering a fourth option. That is, taking the company public. Going public, the fourth alternative is to file a Form S-1 with the SEC. This would be equivalent to conducting an IPO for the company, as several other cryptocurrency startups have attempted in the last 2 months. Blockstack stated as much in its offering circular filed to the SEC in July. We currently anticipate registering the initial distributions of mined STACS tokens under the Securities Act using Form S-1, with the tokens initially being delivered to a wallet that we own so that we can require miners to make appropriate securities laws representations before they receive the mined tokens, as well as ensure our compliance with anti-money laundering laws and know your customer requirements. While registering STX as publicly traded shares in the U.S. does open up participation for general mining to U.S. persons, Ali said going through with an IPO requires a lot more work than the other options. For starters, even with the SEC's approval to conduct an IPO, Blockstack would likely need to receive additional state-by-state approval to issue newly mined STX tokens. While this is not a requirement of traditional securities, cryptocurrencies according to Rosenblum fall into a strange category of securities law requiring the approval of state securities regulators as well as federal. It will be expensive, but no one knows for sure how much it's going to cost to deal with various states, Rosenblum said. No one knows for sure if every state is even going to give their approval. It's possible that if you did a registered offering for Form S-1, you would be approved to sell in some but not every state. Even so, Rosenblum views the approval of an S-1 for a blockchain startup as simply a matter of time given the continuous growth of the industry. Whether Blockstack will be the first blockchain startup to go public is an unanswered question. I would say we are far from deciding on any option right now, said Ali. Playing the long game. Outside of Regulations S, D, A and taking the company public, blockchain attorney Matthew E. Cohen said there is a possibility in the long term of U.S. regulators deeming Blockstack's STX token as no longer a security. At which point, a lot of these ongoing requirements Blockstack has to deal with disappear, said Cohen. Blockstack states as much in its initial offering circular by disclosing that the company itself could determine that STX are no longer securities for purposes of federal securities laws. We anticipate this to occur sometime in 2020 or the first quarter of 2021, within a year following the introduction of mining to the Blockstack network, the offering circular states. How Blockstack would go about making this determination and which U.S. regulators would bless such a decision is presently unclear, Cohen said. At the same time, issuance of tokens through mining is a murky subject matter altogether, according to Rosenblum, who sees a massive gulf between what the SEC has said and what they've actually done in terms of enforcement. It's difficult to understand and reconcile that the SEC views most or virtually all tokens other than Bitcoin, Ether, possibly EOS and a few others as securities with their absolute reluctance and failure to take any action on all sorts of cryptocurrency issuers that do pay miners in the U.S. currently but have not registered those tokens, Rosenblum said. Where is the SEC in all of this? What are they doing? Still, in light of what the SEC has previously done and stated especially on cryptocurrencies such as Bitcoin and Ethereum, the possibility remains for STX to one day be categorized as a commodity asset rather than a security. Even so, Ali explained that Blockstack will only activate mining under a clear legal framework in order to avoid regulatory uncertainty. What we solved for with the Reg A was how to do an offering where the general public can participate. Turning mining on has related issues, but it's not the same problem. It's a different problem, Ali said. The end framework for mining might end up looking different. This concludes our edition for today. We want to thank again PayCademy, the first business school to learn payments and fintech, for their support. You can find more information on their website at paycademy.com. We hope you enjoyed it and see you tomorrow for our next edition.